the church's music from the 20th century. The 17th century. The 11th century. The 8th century. The 4th century. The best of the church's music from the past 2,000 years. LutheranPublicRadio.org.
I'm signing this important executive order. I'm asking the Justice Department that, much like they did in the civil rights era, to do something, do everything in their power to protect these women seeking to invoke their rights.
That's President Biden speaking July 8th about his executive order on abortion rights. The reaction from the White House to the overturning of Roe v. Wade hasn't really made anybody happy, not those who are pushing for more expansive abortion rights nationwide, and not those who are happy that Roe has been overturned. What exactly did the executive order say, and what will it do? Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. live on this Monday afternoon, July the 11th. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We'll be talking with Alexandra DeSantis about President Biden's executive order on abortion. We'll discuss a survey on the happiness of Americans with Lyman Stone, research fellow at the Institute for Family Studies, and then Dr. Donna Harrison, executive director of the American Association of Pro-Life Obstetricians and Gynecologists, will join us to discuss the New York Times' latest sex ed quiz in hour two. We'll look forward to Sunday morning talking with Dr. Carl Fikancher about Mary and Martha in Luke chapter 10. Joining us to discuss President Biden's executive order on abortion, Alexandra DeSantis. She's staff writer for National Review, visiting fellow at the Ethics and Public Policy Center, and co-author of the new book, Tearing Us Apart, How Abortion Harms Everything and Solves Nothing. Alexandra, welcome back.
Hey, great to be with you, Todd.
How do you summarize the Biden administration's reaction to the overturning of Roe?
You know, I think the best way to understand it is that it's 4 pages of very intense, I guess you would say, optical commitment to abortion on demand, but there's no substance to it. So it doesn't actually do very much. There's a lot of commenting about taking action and taking steps, but the action and steps are never actually clearly delineated. So it's really just the kind of angry shout of an administration that wants to sound like it supports abortion, but can't really do very much about it.
So what does the executive order actually say vis-a-vis, he mentioned the Justice Department. There's also standing next to him, Javier Becerra of the HHS. What does it say with regard to those two departments?
So the Justice Department, the main thing the executive order promises is that the administration will defend anybody who faces legal action for lawfully obtaining an abortion. So I don't know what that would really look like, but I guess the idea is, to the extent that anybody is trying to be prevented from obtaining an abortion when they are permitted to do so, the administration will step in and make it clear that they're permitted to do so. And then HHS has a more substantive role, or more, a lot more of the executive order is dedicated to talking about HHS, but most of it is very insubstantial, kind of like I said. So it's creating a website, reproductiverights.org, educating the public, creating a public education campaign about abortion access. None of it is very substantial or any actual policy changes.
So it's a position statement rather than a policy statement, because he can dictate policy if he wants to.
That's right. And it's actually interesting. You know, the executive order opens by saying, as President Biden has said in the past, the main thing that needs to happen is Congress has to codify Roe v. Wade, as he said many times, right? And so he's sort of reiterating and acknowledging that in order for anything real and substantive to happen with regard to preserving abortion on demand, Congress would be the one who'd have to do something. And he clearly has decided not to egregiously overstep his authority here.
How have abortion advocacy groups responded to the executive order?
They're very unhappy with it. There hasn't been a ton of public outrage, I wouldn't say, from, you know, the Planned Parenthoods of the world. I think they're they're happy to accept kind of the virtue signaling of the administration just to keep him as an ally. But certainly abortion activists, they don't think that Biden's fully on board. They see this as the end of the world. And I think they don't really care very much about who has constitutional authority to do what. I think they just want abortion across all 50 states throughout pregnancy. And they want him to do whatever he has to do to make that happen.
In his remarks, President Biden mentioned the story of a 10-year-old girl in Ohio who was allegedly raped and forced to seek an abortion in another state. What do we now know about this alleged incident?
Yeah, so unfortunately, this story is very hazy, and it's frustrating because it's a horrific thing if it did happen. But everybody who's been repeating it has been doing so with very little verification. As far as I know, there was only ever one source for this story. No one has ever even found the man who supposedly did this horrible thing. Even, you know, mainstream outlets like the Washington Post, I believe, have written articles kind of calling into question whether this story is true or how many details or facts we actually know. And yet it's been repeated uncritically by abortion advocates now, including the president, to kind of back up some unknown point or defense of abortion.
What do abortion advocates really want from the federal government post-Roe?
I think the main thing they're looking for is just for abortion to be legal throughout all 9 months of pregnancy. And I don't think they're picky about how that happens, right? I mean, for the last 50 years, that status quo has been enforced in a very heavy-handed way by the Supreme Court, which never had the constitutional authority to do that. And so I think the most committed abortion defenders don't particularly care whether it's Congress or the president or the Supreme Court. They just don't want states to be allowed to protect unborn human beings.
So administration officials are blaming the Hyde Amendment for the president's vague or perhaps even non-existent policy proposals. What is the Hyde Amendment, and is it tying his hands?
I do think there's some truth to that. Yeah, the Hyde Amendment is formerly was a bipartisan agreement. These days, it's just a Republican policy that's for 50 years now has typically been applied to any spending bill and has been applied to the executive agencies in their spending so that they don't directly reimburse for the cost of abortion procedures, for example, through Medicaid. And so what this means is you can't have federal dollars directly going towards abortion procedures. This takes many different forms depending on which particular agency we're talking about. But in the case of the Biden administration, I think it makes it more difficult for him to get away with saying we're going to funnel money into X, Y, and Z pro-abortion program, because if you end up actually funding abortion, I think that could complicate matters.
Is the Hyde Amendment in any kind of peril, given the fact that the Democratic Party controls all three branches of government, more or less?
I do think it's certainly on shakier ground than it has ever been, to my knowledge. There have been spending bills passed and signed so far in the Biden administration, at least one that allowed funding to go to Planned Parenthood because it didn't include the Hyde Amendment. And there are the votes for that. But I don't think there's support, given how narrow the margin is in the Senate. I don't think there's support for just outright doing away with the Hyde Amendment altogether.
Health and Human Services Secretary Javier Becerra says that his department's going to work with the Justice Department to open up more access to abortion pills. Tell us about these pills. Are they safe?
They definitely are not safe. So the pill, it's a chemical abortion drug. It's used typically in the first 10 weeks of pregnancy, although Planned Parenthood will give it out up to 12 weeks, even though it's not authorized for that purpose. And essentially, women obtain these drugs and take them at home and experience what kind of intentional miscarriage. They have the symptoms of a miscarriage, but it's an intentional abortion, of course, at home. And something that progressives have been working on for the last 2 years now under the guise of COVID is getting authorization to administer these drugs to women via telemedicine appointments. So without having to go see a doctor in person, women can now get these chemical abortion drugs, which is particularly risky because if you don't see a doctor first, you might not know that you have something like an ectopic pregnancy. You might not know how far along your pregnancy is, and you could end up with even more dangerous complications or side effects as a result of taking these drugs at home.
Is it true that after the Roe decision, the White House actually, I think through the website, a linked website, were advocating that women, if they have complications from the abortion pill, basically withhold the information when they seek treatment at a hospital and say it's just a miscarriage?
Yeah, this is something that abortion supporters have been recommending doing for a long time. I think they mistakenly believe, or some of them I think cynically say, that abortion restrictions would make it more difficult for women to get treatment if they have a miscarriage. That's simply not the case, right? If you take a chemical abortion pill and you experience complications, you can always get treatment. And even if there is a law against chemical abortion drugs or against abortion in a particular state, the person who's going to be prosecuted is never the woman who has the abortion, right? It's always going to be whoever prescribed the drugs or whoever performed the abortion procedure. So those women are never at risk. And whether you're experiencing a miscarriage or complications from a chemical abortion, you're always safe to tell a doctor and, in fact, should tell the doctor the truth so that you can get the best treatment you need.
So I guess what I'm wondering is, are these pills, in effect, the back alley abortions that abortion advocates have been warning us about all this time?
Yeah, I mean, they certainly are dangerous. It's not as though every woman who takes them is going to end up in the hospital or anything like that, but they do have higher rates of complications than surgical abortion, and their use is certainly proliferating. We know that more than half of abortions in the U.S. now are chemical abortions, and just because of the ease of access and, like I mentioned earlier, being able to take them at home with no doctor supervision, no in-person appointment, just the odds are much higher that women are going to have health risks and complications. And unfortunately, the abortion supporters don't seem to be especially concerned about that possibility.
Are there any safeguards in place currently in terms of the end user, the woman or in some cases, the girl who actually takes that series of pills, to keep them from the hands of minors?
Not that I'm aware of. You know, I'm not super familiar with the prescription process, but I would think that if you had some kind of doctor's appointment online, given that you can obtain them via telemedicine, it would be fairly easy to obtain them underage without any, you know, parental consent or anything like that. And something Ryan and I write about in our book, Tearing Us Apart, is the fact that these pills can enable sex trafficking, right? Because if you're a woman being trafficked, you can be forced to go through a telemedicine consultation, essentially, never go in person to a clinic, never see anybody who might be able to recognize that you need help. And it's much easier to just kind of keep these poor women victimized and trafficked.
How do you account for the apparent lack of preparation in the Biden administration, despite the leak of the draft opinion weeks earlier on the Dobbs decision?
I think my sense is that the administration was not sure how far it wanted to go in response, and they made the mistake of waiting too late to decide, because there's some reports that the administration had considered issuing or declaring a public health emergency to try and keep abortion clinics open or to somehow make it impossible for states to regulate abortion even after Roe was overturned, and they decided not to do that. And so my sense is they waited too long to pull a trigger on that final decision, and by the time Roe had been overturned, they were sort of scrambling for some kind of response that looked like they were doing something without actually overstepping as far as actually trying to keep abortion clinics open.
The president was asked as late as yesterday about that public health emergency, and he seemed to keep the door open to that possibility. What would that actually mean? What would it look like?
You know, I honestly am not sure. It seems to me like he thinks that he could use the presidential power, I think, typically is interpreted as having more, you have more leeway or there's more authority if there's some kind of public health. I mean, look at what happened during COVID. If we all kind of agree there's a public health emergency, that kind of permissiveness of what the administration can do would probably go up. I don't actually know, and no one has said, as far as I know, what that would look like practically. I mean, would the Department of Justice go into states that are trying to regulate abortion and stop them? Or, I mean, who really knows what it would look like? And I figure that's part of why they're hesitating, because they're not sure what it would look like either.
There have been repeated calls by abortion advocates to codify Roe in Congress. What exactly does that mean? And why hasn't the Democratic-controlled House, Senate, and White House done that in the time since Biden took office?
Yeah, so when they say that, it's interesting, because the bill that they are talking about actually would go further than Roe v. Wade did. Of course, Roe was very extreme, but the bill is called the Women's Health Protection Act, which is, of course, very backwards name. And it would, first of all, it would create a fundamental right to abortion, so you couldn't have any limits on abortion throughout all 9 months of pregnancy. It would essentially pretend that the decision in Roe was now part of federal law, or would make it part of federal law. But it would also strike down any pro-life law in any state in the entire country, and it would prohibit states from enacting pro-life laws going forward. And this could be anything like a partial birth abortion ban at the state level or informed consent provisions requiring doctors to tell women about the risks of abortion ahead of time. Even those under the language of this bill would be deemed impermissible because abortion would be a fundamental right. And it hasn't passed simply because they don't have the votes in Congress. Chuck Schumer has brought it for a vote at least two times now, and it's failed both times. I think they're gearing up to do it again.
In his remarks in issuing his executive order, President Biden urged people to go out and vote, essentially change the complexion of Congress, and then pass this codification of Roe, and he pledged to sign it immediately is the minute it landed on his desk. Would it survive a court challenge?
You know, I don't think that it would, because who knows how far it would go or which court would handle it, but I suspect that any good judge would realize that under the logic of Dobbs, which said there's no right to abortion anywhere in the Constitution, and essentially said states can legislate on this now, no good judge could look at the law and say, yes, Congress has the constitutional authority to create a right to abortion.
Finally, then, Alexandra, why are the advocates for abortion apparently timid and or perhaps even scared of this issue, abortion, being decided in state legislatures?
It's a great question, and it's very funny because they'll say on the one hand, you know, before Roe was overturned, Roe is popular with the American people. 7 in 10 Americans don't want it overturned. And so then you have to wonder to yourself, well, why does it matter to you so much if it's overturned? People just vote the current status quo into law if they really do support it. And the truth is they know that the American people do not support the status quo in Roe. Most Americans would prefer to see abortion limited to, at most, the first trimester or, you know, the so-called hard cases of rape or when the mother's life is at risk. They do not support abortion on demand throughout all 9 months of pregnancy. And I think abortion advocates know that.
Alexandra DeSantis is a staff writer for National Review. She's visiting fellow at the Ethics and Public Policy Center, co-author of the new book, Tearing Us Apart, How Abortion Harms Everything and Solves Nothing. You can purchase this book at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Talk On Demand Archives. Alexandra, thank you very much, and keep up the good work.
Thank you.
We'll spend some time with Lyman Stone, research fellow at the Institute for Family Studies, right after the break. We're going to talk about a survey on the happiness or the unhappiness of some Americans. Stay tuned. Thanks to our beloved on-demand listeners, Issues Etc. consistently ranks among the top podcasts in religion and spirituality. You can help us climb the charts by subscribing, rating, and reviewing Issues Etc. Type Issues Etc. in your podcast provider, hit the subscription button, and leave us a 5-star review. This will make it easier for podcast listeners to find Issues Etc. Help us cast Christ's net on the internet. Subscribe, rate, and review Issues Etc. today.
The Lutheran Church Missouri Synod's Life Ministry is thousands of people sharing Christ's love and mercy and giving witness to our Lord's creation of life, His design for marriage and the family, and the God-given value of all human life from conception to natural death. Working with many partners, LCMS Life Ministry sponsors human care efforts that meet the needs of body and soul and provides resources and educational events for all ages. To learn more, email lifeministry@lcms.org and visit lcms.org/life.
Defending life from beginning to end. You're listening to Issues Etc.
From the time of Moses, 3,500 years ago, the Church has been adorning her sacred spaces at the instruction of the Lord. Ad Crucem seeks to continue this tradition to the best of our ability as we create beautiful things to point us to Christ crucified for sinners. See our posters, greeting cards, artwork, and banners, each proclaiming the good work that our Lord has done for us. Visit adcrucem.com. That's adcrucem.com.
We desire for all Christian children, including those with learning or behavior challenges, to receive a strong education in the faith. At simplyclassical.com, you will find reading, penmanship, and copybook exercises based on the truth, wisdom, and comfort of God's Word. We include Aesop's fables and classic children's literature, math, and science, all from Memoria Press. Use promo code LPR22 at simplyclassical.com.